Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment. As usual, once we welcome our guests here, we turn it over to them and we buckle up and wait for this wonderful journey that they take us on. It is an honor as usual. I welcome them to come and I just hold the space by which they can then be truthful and share their journey with us and be comfortable doing it. It is my honor to have you at Threads of Enlightenment. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you, actually, for drawing me to you and to your audience. I'm honored. And I come to you at 6 o'clock in the morning. I know we're on different time zones and such, and I'm a morning person, so that's all good. And I'm excited to jump into this conversation.
Excellent. Tell them all. Introduce yourself and tell them everything that you have, everything about you.
Fantastic. I'm Terry Short, and I have been creating for quite some time, and I love that you profile those who create, because we all do. Yes. Every day, every moment, and that's what connects us, is that yes. Creation, right? So in 2020, during the heat of the pandemic, really, I published my first book. Mm-hmm. There will be more, and it's called The Words We Choose, Your Guide to How and Why Words Matter. Mm-hmm. And I spend an enormous amount of time coaching the content of that book. In mm-hmm. addition, I created 4 online courses related to the content. And I'll tell you the important thing about the content to me, because there are a lot of books about communication out there. The way that I framed this book was, first and foremost, the words we choose for ourselves. I like to call that our personal podcast, and we'll yes. talk a little bit more about that later. And then the next chapter goes to the words we choose with loved ones, and a little mm-hmm. bit about triggers and conditioning and how that matters. Then the words we choose at large and in the world. And I talk about sexism and racism and ageism and, you know, how word choices affect others in our world, than words we choose at work and words we choose sort of when we're not speaking, email, notes, texts and such. And I end with words we choose for the greater good spiritually. So yes. whether that's in prayer, that's in meditation, setting intentions, and how to have great clarity. So that's the nature of the book. In addition, Ken, we just finished this past weekend our very first retreat of 2022.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was so exciting and it was very well received. And we have a couple of more coming up. And the retreats are to ignite and sustain the joy of leadership. And mm-hmm. so whether you're leading yourself or others, how you can tap into your spiritual and intuitive intelligence, your inner knowing, and more readily tap into that inner knowing in order to allow it to serve your outer challenges. So your personal challenges or your professional challenges. Because I believe the greater the overlap of the mm-hmm. two, that's where the joy is. That's where one thrives. So that's what I coach. And now we're expanding out to draw more people to us and have the ability to do retreats where it's an immersive experience.
That is awesome. I think you're absolutely right in so many fronts. Words govern the world and it'll govern yours. I can't wait to have this conversation because I believe in the power of it. As creators, it is this thing that guides us. It is the stuff that holds our worlds together. I call it the statement of fate, Terry. And let me explain why. Because you have to believe it. And I believe that when you release it, it will cause energy to go forward that will pull people to you, pull situation to you, to help you to accomplish what you have just released from the spoken word. So we're going to have a wonderful conversation. So let's go back. I want to go back to when you were born in this beautiful world of ours. You got in, your parents got you from the hospital. They kissed this beautiful girl. She's in the hospital. She came in the car. They brought her into the crib. And I usually say the crib is another area because it has bars, keeps us there's a whole thing that I go in about that, is that we have to learn how to climb out of this cage. Anyway, but here they've put us in this wonderful surroundings, and you are beginning to be programmed by mom and dad. Talk to me about your lifestyle, your parent, and how was your household coming up?
Well, when they brought me home and put me in that tiny cage, I love that. Imagine that I started out in a cage that I've intuitively known I was to get out of from the moment I got in it.
Yeah.
So my mother and father have been married for 67 years. Wow. They were high school sweethearts.
That's beautiful.
And they brought, I was the third child that they brought home. Mm-hmm. Then there was one more to come. So there are four of us all together. I like to say I'm the middle child because I have an older sister and a younger sister. And then my brother and I are 18 months apart. So we're right in the middle, but he's the only boy. So that has its own thing, right?
Yeah.
So I had a relatively idyllic upbringing. You know, we lived in Maryland, and my parents did the best they knew how to do. They came to the job with probably limited knowledge of how to parent, and certainly very limited sense of anything spiritual. We went to church for the holidays. The holidays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we were dressed to the hilt. I had little gloves for Easter and a little hat and a little purse. Yeah. Anyway, but it was idyllic. We went to the beach in the summers, and we played Little League. My brother played football and I played softball, and you know, I was a cheerleader, blah, blah, blah. Right. We did it all. That was their sense of giving us the upbringing. And they were there for us in that manner. And I went to Catholic schools from, I don't know, for as long as I can remember, all through high school, even university. I went to Loyola University, right? And at the time, you know, I studied Latin. I enjoyed the mass in Latin. I'm not Catholic, but I still was sort of exploring. And in high school was when I started to have a desire to understand world religions. Mm-hmm. I actually recall Ken coming home. I was probably about 17, and I said to my parents, "I think I'd like to be Jewish." And I was the rock the boat kid of the kids, right?
Yeah. That's beautiful. So here you are. You are the rock the boat kid. I love that. I love that terminology, by the way. I was the black sheep in the family, as they say. That's another terminology that they use. The ones that challenge all the other belief systems out there. So here you are. You've decided, you've made the declaration that I may want to be Jewish. How did you start incorporating your confession with the things that are necessary to become Jewish?
Well, I dug a little deeper into that, and it seemed way more complicated than I anticipated. So I explored Buddhism, Hinduism. You know, I was looking and looking, and that didn't come to be. And so I eventually, when I left university, I took what nowadays we call a gap year.
Yes.
We didn't call them a gap year then. I was going to just take a year off and go skiing. And lo and behold, after my winter skiing, I ended up in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And Ken, I ended up in San Francisco in the 80s, in the middle of the AIDS pandemic.
AIDS, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that opened not just my eyes, it opened my heart. It's when I first realized, you know, I've listened to several of your podcasts, and you speak to people about that moment.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a moment. It was a year or that first year and into the several years that followed, and understanding that my statement of faith, it became, you know, I didn't know it then. And I love that term that you say that, but I realized that I am love, and so are each of these other people. And I became very close to people who suffered through the AIDS pandemic, or not pandemic. What did we call it? AIDS epidemic.
Epidemic.
And had many friends. I was, you know, at the beginning, I was waiting tables. I was in hospitality, and I had many friends who were impacted by this. And that's when I fully understand that my very limited upbringing in Maryland had served me to that point. Mm-hmm. And now there was a greater world with more people with greater needs. And I was now going to step into being a part of that and not be limited or held back by any dogmatic beliefs that may have been imprinted on me to that point.
Yeah, it's amazing how the belief system makes us behave towards each other. It is really, I think it's a corrupt way that we utilize it, even imagination, all the tools that are powerful of its own right, how we utilize it to cause damage, how we use imagination to build up fear in our belief system, which causes us to do these things. When it's a choice, it's simply a choice. It's your perception on things. Why choose fear? I know a lot about the culture of AIDS because I was a part of the healthcare system, and I went to an ashram that was instrumental in Florida, Majaya. Her ashram was instrumental in the caring of people with AIDS in Sebastian, Florida. And part of the Florida thing, she was instrumental in the whole movement, bringing love into that space, because those human spirits were brutalized by the heartlessness. I want to say that people that didn't love themselves, because you cannot love yourself and treat someone the way they did. So we saw in the 80s was an expression of people that did not love themselves. Talk to me as you started exploring this newness of you, how did that began to mold the way that you think and the way that you live?
Well, I'm going to back up a little bit more. So I'm going to back up just a tiny bit more to speak about my father. So I know we're recording this for the universe, but we could go with I was daddy's girl.
Yeah.
And my siblings are aware of that to this day. They're aware of that. And due to that, that connection that I've always had with my father, I was, at a very young age, I was taught or told by him that I was capable of anything, that I could do mm-hmm. anything. And so I grew up saying, yes, I can. Of course I can. Yes, I can. Yeah. And so that's important to when mm-hmm. I get to San Francisco and I'm faced with this fear and this, layers and layers and layers of fear, right? And relating back to people in my world in Maryland, and what stuck with me was, yes, I can. Yes, I can believe in the power of love and the reduction in fear and the trust that I believe that trust is the key mm-hmm. to unlock the fear to move to love.
Yes.
Anyway, so I came very confidently into that place based on the relationship that I had with my father. And to this day, I mean, he's always been my biggest fan, you know, right? So I was able to believe in myself.
Yeah.
Which is what you said. It was a look inward. And when I did any questioning of myself, sometimes people look inward and they question themselves or they start to explore and they don't trust what those answers are. And because they lack the confidence, they lack the self-esteem. So the more self-awareness you have, it builds upon itself and that builds the confidence. And what I'm saying is I had some already. I had a really solid dose of it already.
That's beautiful. I would tell my kids, I have five sons, and so I would take each and every one of them out one at a time. And then I would take them out collectively. And so that I got to know each individually, but we also got to know each other. And I felt it was important to get to know them because I didn't get a chance to have that relationship with my parents. But I knew because of my culture from British Guiana that I'm capable of doing everything and anything that I wanted. And so it does make the individual a little stronger to deal with things versus someone who is not in that space. Because if you are not sure of who you are, somebody will tell you who you are. And so you have to learn to be confident. I mean, you had mentioned people that are not sure of who they are. I think it's such a painful place to be, because not being able to even trust yourself is a painful place to be. But here you are, you're being challenged, you've been opened up, you've been you understand that you have a foundation that was given, that beautiful gift that was given by your father. As you begin to build on that foundation, talk to me about this young woman with being confident in the middle of a epidemic. How did she begin to move forward to carve her piece of expression, as I want to say, in this little planet?
Well, I will say at that time, I was very focused on my contribution in the workforce. Yes. Too. So I started to build upon my career, and that was very important to me, particularly as a mm-hmm. woman. So I ended up, Ken, I was eventually with Four Seasons Hotels, and when I was around the board table, I was the only screen. Wow. And so I that's another mm-hmm. layer that was going on in the 80s in San Francisco. And so it's the combination of me feeling into my capabilities professionally, and that constantly reinforced my confidence so that I was able to show up with friends, with loved ones, with my family. Then was my community. Yeah. What was my friend group, right? I mean, I went back east couple times a year, but this was my yeah. family mm-hmm. now, and there were people to love as a part of that, and I believe that I continued to be in a good place and stay in a strong place because of my career, which was like fast and furious building, and I was in a take no prisoners situation. Yeah, yeah. I was saying I am capable of this, and you know I was. It was obvious I was the only woman, and that sometimes had its challenges, but I overcame them almost without giving them value, yeah. because that what was going on there was not about yeah. me. It was, again, based on someone else's fear and someone else's limiting beliefs. And so I grew to know that limiting beliefs did not serve me. They didn't serve the others either. But at that time, I wasn't knowing that I would come to coach others to bust out of their limiting mm-hmm. belief. At that time, I was, you know, I was in my 20s. I was really only worried about my
yeah,
own
yeah.
and getting out of my own limiting beliefs.
I think you have to go yeah. through the journey. And I tell people and I hate to say the end, but it's not the end. I mean, as far as the graduation from that particular classroom, but the class still continues. But you have graduated and gained enough where you now, I think, we become the highest gift that we can have on this planet as individuals, is we become servants. And so we yes. title that teacher, we title that all kinds of things, but we are in a space of serving. And being in that place is an intoxication level that you will not believe, that there isn't a drug on the earth except for that can make you feel the way that feels. So talk to me about, as you begin to grow, you're, you know, developing as this strong, independent woman. I love that. I love strong, independent women. There is nothing more powerful on the planet to have that. I think when you see a woman walk in who she is, because my mother trained up my sisters to be that way. And my mother was like that. So talk to me as this powerful girl begins to carve her way through. And now you are working on developing yourself. Tell me about some of those belief systems that you had to unhook up as you notice some of them within your journey.
My belief systems that were yeah. limiting, mm-hmm. you mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it it really was born out of those that I was relating to. And so, for example, I had my best friend, he was still well at the time, and he wanted to go back and visit his partner wasn't. He wanted to go back and visit his family at Thanksgiving. And he asked for me to go as his girlfriend.
Wow.
And I did that. I went to his small community, to his family, and I actually went a couple of times. And we went under the guise that that we were in a relationship, mm-hmm. right? And I kept understanding the difficulties of the human condition, yeah. right? And that his where his parents were stuck, and you know, and I was hopeful that in time that would come to be different for him, and it did in the final amount of time that he had here. But he was a great teacher to me, and hopefully to his family as well. And so I journeyed through different relationships that kept opening my eyes. This one, and just the minute you would think your eyes were open, your heart was open.
Yep.
There'd be another circumstance, and it was a constant exploration while juggling my own exploration of who I was in the business world and what my contribution was becoming. And I, at the time, so now by the time I'm 30, I'm truly understanding that being a leader meant being in service to others. And I start to see the difference in how some people lead and how others lead. And I start to make choices. As you said earlier, every day is a choice. Every minute's a choice. That's what I teach my children, is that it's a series of choices that we make. So I started to make choices that would set me down a path of leading from a place of love and being present for those that I was in service to.
Yeah, I have a saying I said in my book that I wrote, the consequence of the splendor of any decision is once you have made it, the consequences, that's all that remains to be seen. You're just waiting for the manifestation of it. And that is, and I would teach my kids, that could show up in a minute, could show up in different timelines you have. Some of the decisions that you make, and I would teach them because I was learning these, and some of the decisions that you make, the timeline as far as their answers can be a minute, 2 minutes, and some a lifetime. But you have to be aware that it could be and recognize which one it is. And then as you do stuff and practice that, you get better at making quality decisions. But life and freedom, and I tell people, freedom is within that aspect of an individual to make decisions. There's a lot of people that are not making decisions. They're just drifting and living life. And I'll give you a scenario, which was, my life many years ago. I got up, went to work, punched the card, or as they say, you come out, you do this time and time, you go home, you sleep, you eat, you can't do anything else, put on a little TV, and you get up, you jump in the car. You're programmed. You're not even on a hook at all. This is your life. And on the weekends, I would numb myself so that I don't even have the chance to think about anything else, because I was drinking, I was partying myself off from Friday all the way. Sunday was recuperating day to crawl into work Monday. And I did this, and most of us do this for 20, 30 years, and we call that living. Isn't that absolute madness? But that's what we call living, and people settle for that and negate the greatness of who they are, Terry. They negate the greatness of the individual being. Talk to me, as you now, you're in your 30s, you're beginning to see the difference about teachers, some of them based teaching from a place of fear, those are teaching from a place of trauma. They're all of them. You see them all. So how did that made you make your decision, your statement of faith going, there has to be another way? Tell me about some of those.
Yes, it's interesting. I wasn't clear about this then because I was in it, but I understand that during that time I would move away from those who were that didn't see themselves in service to others, or that were coming from a place of fear. Atoms that repel, I would move away, right? And I was doing that. I was choosing to move away. Ah, you know, bad energy, what have you. It wasn't until probably my 50s that I learned to, that I learned or acknowledged that I had the choice to move towards those people because that is perhaps why they showed up in my life in the first place.
Yeah.
Right. And perhaps there's an impact that I can make. And so I spent my 20s, maybe even part of my 40s, moving away from those individuals, learning, but learning all along. And it wasn't until really in my 50s that I started to understand that every person that shows up, and I coach this now, when I, my coaching clients, a week does not go by, Ken, that somebody doesn't say, well, I'd like to talk about a difficult conversation I have to have or this difficult employee or what have you. And if my very first thing is, well, we're going to call it an alleged difficult conversation because why is it difficult? And what I didn't understand in my 30s, I understand now, is that I bear a piece of the degree of difficulty. Mm-hmm. If I say I'm going to have this difficult conversation with Ken who reports to me, I bear of the degree of difficulty, some portion of it. Now, Ken might bear a piece of it as well, but I didn't see that in my 30s. I just thought, difficult person. And I just moved away, right? And now I understand that that's the point at which the reflection is most necessary, right? That when I feel myself saying, this is potentially difficulty, or I even have a physical adverse reaction to entering a conversation, that's the point at which the self-reflection is the most important.
It makes you go forward.
So I like to, because it's, we like to say it's about them, this alleged difficult person. And to some degree it might be, but it's also about me. And it's about my, how I'm showing up and what I might bring to them. And that's what made me write the book, that I started to hear so much that, I mean, all through my 30s and 40s, I became very attuned to the words people chose for themselves and for others and the impact that that had in their ability to thrive or not, and the ability for others to thrive or not. The words that, you know, let me tell you, in the 80s, the things leaders said got away with. Yeah. I was just nuttiness, right? Anyway, so I was learning, and then starting to pull that all together, which is, that's the world that I live in now, the place where it's relatively pulled together. But every day, like you said, there are choices and I choose, I choose to show up to help reflect back to those that I coach and those that I meet along the way in retreats and the way that we gather others, is to help them take a deeper look inward. Yeah.
I wanted to, the reason why I'm getting there is I'm coming to the words now, because this is where we're going to have some good fun. Because as you said, and you lead into it, that you started to notice the power of someone's words all the way from when you were in 20s and so forth. And so here we are now. You're in your 50s. I'm not going to say anything.
I am.
Me too. I love my 50s, man. I love it. So it's okay. So you are here and you're now seeing and you understand is the key. Because we saw it. But now you have an understanding of the power of words. And how do you use words to now govern you?
Great question. Well, I started with my children. So there's a very important book, particularly if you're raising children, girls, but even if you're raising boys, to know the work in the book about raising girls would influence even how you speak to your boys. It's called Reviving Ophelia. Mm-hmm. And my children are 24 and 25. The boys 25 and the girls 24. And I read that book and that was another time. So I was in my 40s and 30s. I was in my 30s and I read that book and started to understand the impact of word choices as children are toddlers and, you know, what difference it makes. And if from simple things, when I'm driving down the road and I say, look at that guy on the backhoe, I'm assuming that that's a guy on the backhoe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, so from sexism type things to word choice. And here's one, hate. Yeah. We never use the word hate in our house. Like there's no value in that word. Like the minute you're saying that I hate vanilla ice cream, the next thing you know, you're saying I hate Susie at school. You know, it goes that way. So anyway, so I'm starting to learn that my children are two of my greatest teachers, and I'm starting to understand that. Right. that I'm starting to be more and more attuned. I think when, by the time you have my career in the leadership piece, by the time you drop children into my life, my eyes are wide. You know, why don't, that's a big responsibility to be choosing the right words in how I'm speaking to them, and they're sponges. Yes. They're soaking up everything, right? So that's what happens. I start to look at this, and I'll give you a couple of key examples that I coach a lot now. The difference between I have to do the laundry this weekend, or I have to pick the kids up from school, or I get to do the laundry because if I have to, it's a burden. Yeah. I'm going to drag myself there. When I say I get to do the laundry, I go to a place of gratitude because I indeed have clothes to launder. I have water. Mm-hmm. I have a washing machine indoors and plumbing, and I have the ability to create fresh laundry. And so when I say I get to do the laundry and I come from that place, it's a whole different experience.
It releases
it's a whole different
feeling. Releases different energy and chemicals within the body. And if you can notice it instantaneously. And I used to teach my children never to say the word can't when it came to learning. I would tell them once they come, they would say, I don't understand. I said, no. And I would tell them, I says, at this present time, I do not have the full understanding of this particular subject. And then that's how I tell them, don't come to me and tell me.
That's right.
I said, you have to rephrase it because why? It puts them in a space to want to study, to get to know the answers and the questions. But when you say, I can't, it can lock up your self, your belief to limit you to gain the answers. It locks you up. And so I would not allow them to ever speak those type words in the house. And it's really interesting to see my kids today, how they have conversations with each other. It's really wonderful. And I would teach them, I said, here are a household with boys, you know, and I would tell them, fighting is the lowest form of communication. And so you need to learn how to communicate as educated human beings. And we have grown up on the ladder where we are no longer need to fight like that. And so I would push them and cause them to, because I understood, I was learning those things just like you were. I was learning them and I was dropping them into my kids, and because I wanted them not to be in a situation longer than they needed to be. Like I was in there for 5 years. You don't need to be there for 5 years. Here is the information. But even then I would offer it to them, and I always tried not to force them to do something, because I realized that each one of us have our own journey, including them. And so I would tell them, just like your father said to you, I would tell them, I am your biggest fan. And so I can't wait to see what decision you would make concerning this situation. And so we can, enjoy the outcome of your decision. So, that's how I had my conversation with them. So you understand this, because it is really a powerful thing to know there, because the words matter. They create. They have the power to create. So I'm so excited that you have a conference where you can teach people the usage of words to create, because it is going to now govern your world. And I may mention to you, as I'm studying people and learning more about life and whatever, and I recognize that as certain aspects in my life, I did not have my statement of faith. And because I did not have it, I stayed in that situation longer than it was necessary. And so I just circled back, kept coming back. But once I made that declaration, I recognized that, oh, wait a minute, I'm in a circular motion here. This has to change. And once I decided what I wanted, I never came back, you know? And it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to hear that you are doing this to people to teach them about your words. So talk to me about, I know you mentioned how the book came about. How is that that journey? Talk to me about the journey about the book, because it is a journey. It's really interesting.
It is. It is. Well, first I want to applaud that you didn't go back. Some people live their whole lifetime and never get out of that recirculating pattern, right? So yay. Oh, yay. Yes. So I published the book in 2020. Mm-hmm. So right in the middle of COVID and such. And so at the time, Ken, I was in New Zealand. That's a long story. I spent all of 2020 in New Zealand. I went for 3 weeks and I stayed for 54. Anyway, published the book there. And so I didn't do a book tour, a proper book tour. So instead I took my book on a tour. Mm-hmm. Of New Zealand. Nice. So I'd be at this waterfall, and I'd talk about, I would shoot videos talking about the content of the book. So for really the journey of exposing the book to others, it was fun because then you get to see New Zealand and you get to learn about the book, right?
I love it.
Well, I thought so. Anyway, it was good fun. I'm all about the fun. So really the exposure to the book is just now coming about. So, typically you have like a big splash, a big launch, but we're in the middle of a pandemic and really only starting to come out of it. So, however, that did not stop me from weaving it into the coaching that I do, into the speaking I do, into creating courses and such, because I do believe that it is incredibly important. And as I speak to people like yourself and many others every day, I tap into more understanding of how important this work is. And I'm thrilled. So the more I can do to bring it to life for individuals. And so, for example, at the retreat we just had, everyone, we put on the board all these limiting words. Everybody thought of all the limiting words. Should, mm-hmm. can't, don't, all these things. Just, so we listed them all out. And then each individual thought about the ones that they engage with the mm-hmm. most and that limits them the most. And then we worked on the replacement words, because that's the thing. So the personal podcast, what the podcast that's playing in your head, sometimes at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. If you think about it as the personal podcast, you're the producer, mm-hmm. the director, the host, the narrator, you get to choose. It's the grand choice is what's playing in your head and what you're believing and you can reorient your conditioning, mm-hmm. regardless of what it was. You can start to do that by way of choosing better words, words that serve you. Words that serve you and words that serve your statement of faith, right? It all should go back to your values and your statement of faith. So that's how you move forward instead of being blocked and limited by allowing on the podcast somebody else's voice, your mother-in-law's mm-hmm. voice, playing something that you don't believe in and that doesn't serve you. So that's where I spend my energy.
Oh, that is awesome. I love that, because I would tell people, and I use the example, and again, because I came out of the Christian background, and I pull out stories from there. And I remember reading in this book, Genesis, when God shows up and the place was a mess, it was dark. And he wanted to change the situation, and he spoke to it. And so, but he didn't just say anything. And that's what I tell people, you have to be specific with your words. You have to be very specific. You can't do generalized things, because the energy is stagnant based on your words that you spoke. And so if you give a generalized word, the energy is stagnant, it's standing there. It has no direction. And so he wanted light. He said, let there be light. And so the words went out, and then the molecules began to formulate to cause this thing to come together, that's formulate, and he called that light. And he said, no, that's light, because he called it. And so we have to then speak to our situations. What world do you want to create? You have to have a picture. We talked about the imagination. You have to have all these tools, looking into yourself, because that's where you've got to go back into there. And then create this picture. And once you begin to create and pull out this picture that you want, then you speak specific to it. I want that. And when you do that, what happens, I believe, just like what happened in Genesis, our words are sent out and we cause molecules to begin to pull together. That is, we send the energy, as you stated on the onset of this thing, can you send the energy and called me? And so the words that, and I did, because I was laying in and I said, I need this. And as when I released that word and I started looking for people, I saw yours and boom, you know, here you are. You have to be specific because your word needs the bullseye to go and bring it to you. Because like I said, that energy will cause people to come, number one. It will cause situations to manifest in order to bring the people to you so that you can finish what you had just declared. There's a scripture, Terry, in the Bible that people would quote, and I remember quoting it, and then I got the revelation of it, changed my life. They said, declare a thing. They use it from the book of Job. Declare a thing and it shall be established. But then I went and I studied the original language, the Hebrew language. It doesn't say that. It says, decide a thing and it shall be established. So you have to decide it first before you can even speak it. So he decided he needed light. He got light. So we have to do the same. We have to decide, what do you want out of this situation? Then speak your specific word and watch the magic happen. And stay consistent. Look, be in a state of awareness to see when the opportunity comes for you to fulfill and notice what you were, because you have released it. And so situation is going to come. People are going to come. But you have to be in a state of awareness or you'll miss it all. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what we just taught in the retreat, is how to maintain that state of awareness to see, to feel into the signs that are out there all day, every day. You're making me remember, Ken, that I have this quote in the book. Tom Kenyon said, "We are creating the world by how we speak to each other."
Yes, I absolutely believe that.
And I like to say, yours is the voice of humankind. Use it well.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. It is my honor to have you here at Threads of Enlightenment. I hope that everyone that is listening to us, you guys got to get into this woman's class. Follow her, get into her, buy the books, buy it for several people. Yeah. Find the videos that she was talking about. I think that's so brilliant. Anyway, I need you guys to get in touch with Terry. I mean, this understanding, I believe that people that have a revelation on certain top carry what we are Christian, from the Christian dome, we call it the anointing, meaning the power that they got from that revelation. So that when Terry speaks on that subject, there is power that's released from her. Why? Because it is her. She has a revelation on it. And so everything that she speaks is power, is truth. It will change your life. Get in touch with this woman because your words are going to change your world. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. It's been my honor.